Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies, and more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Andrew Shotland, a longtime friend and industry colleague and thought leader in local SEO and the CEO of Local SEO Guide. So we talked to Andrew from our studio in San Francisco about that journey and what he's learned from it and what we can all take away from that. So here's our discussion with Andrew Shotland. So Andrew, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Yep. So we got a lot to talk about, including diving deeper into everything I just mentioned. But first, let's kind of start with the present. Tell us a little bit about yourself and Local SEO Guide for those that are unfamiliar.
Sure. So Local SEO Guide is, I guess, what you call a full-service SEO consultancy. We specialize in – we do a lot of work in local search. So that could mean anything from a single location, like a an electrician, to a multi-location company, like a big retailer, let's say. But we also do, I'd say half our business has nothing to do with local, just anybody with a website who's facing SEO issues or needs an SEO strategy.
Mm-hmm. So a lot to dig into there. There's a lot of things that you're looking about, a lot of things you're writing about, which we're going to circle back to. But as we like to do in the show, hit the rewind button and go back to kind of the beginning of your career and then work our way back to the present. So tell us about the kind of initially the path that brought you into the world of search marketing and local in particular. So how did that all start for you?
Well, probably like with most people, I had no plan, and the plan was executed with perfection. Let's see, I guess I'll start kind of what probably is like midway in my career. So I was I actually wanted to work in the entertainment industry and got a job at Showtime Networks and was working in their business development group, working on early early interactive television ideas. This was back before the internet. Suddenly the internet came around. There was this thing called the Mosaic browser that people started talking about, and AOL Prodigy, these closed internet networks. And no one else wanted to really deal with them, and I was kind of the low guy in the totem pole. And it was pretty clear that interactive television was not happening anytime soon. And so I actually, my first internet experience, I guess, was entering programming information into Prodigy's TV scheduling app at the time for Showtime. And in fact, the first thing I ever published on the World Wide Web was a description of a Red Shoe Diaries episode, which for those of you who don't know is or was Showtime's kind of
late nights
very softcore porn programming. So it's something you'd watch with your with your loved one to kind of get
you
in
wrote the review like you were
no I wrote like a woman pops out of a cake at a man's birthday party.
So it's like metadata.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the first thing I published on this medium that, the publishing platform for the entire world for personal expression.
That's amazing. You should find that somehow and frame it. Like, I don't know if the Wayback Machine goes back that far, but.
No. And it's on Prodigy, so it wasn't.
It's not cached. Right.
So, anyhow, long story short, the internet kind of became a thing. I launched Showtime's first website. Pretty quickly got recruited to NBC to help them with their startup internet group. Did all sorts of things, including I helped start the first network of TV station websites, NBC's affiliate websites called NBC Interactive Neighborhood. And at that point, that was the first time I ever did anything in local search. Yeah. And, wasn't even calling it local search. It was just like trying to figure out what NBC should do on the web. And well, fast forward many years later, this is right after the dot-com implosion in the early 2000s. I got connected with a guy named Stu McFarlane who had this idea to start this kind of website that was like a Yellow Pages with reviews. And so he and I basically just started working on it together out of Idea Lab, and we started this thing called Insider Pages. And That's really where I got my deep into local stuff.
Yeah.
And so Insider Pages was an early version of Yelp. We launched probably 3 months before Yelp did. And then, and that's really where I got into local search and SEO.
Yeah. Interesting. It's, you know, local SEO being the kind of subsector of search and search marketing, and the size and the importance that's became. It's interesting when I talk to people that got into it initially, like the David Mims of the world and like the, you know, Will Scotts of the world, like you were in that kind of original crew, like the OGs of local SEO, like just before it really became a thing. But it's also interesting you mentioned Insider Pages. I think that was one of the companies that when I first started to become an analyst in the local space, covering kind of what's going on and first starting to see some of the challenges in getting that content, the chicken and egg challenge of reviews. And I remember just now, like what one of the things you guys did to incentivize that was to give away the Starbucks gift cards. And that was one of the things that Insider Pages was remembered for. But I think it really underscored early on. So that challenge of getting seeding the reviews activity.
Yeah, we proved that you could, in fact, pay people to write crappy reviews on your site.
Right.
And in reality, that program is really what spurred our SEO, because suddenly we were getting a huge amount of content added to our site, whether it was good or not.
Yep.
And we were getting a huge amount of links because every like website that was like make money online website was linking to us. Hey, you can get $5 Starbucks cards for writing 5 reviews in 5 seconds on Insider Pages. And yeah, we blew through probably $500,000 in a month doing that stuff.
So it had an unintended SEO benefit that revealed probably for the first time before it was a thing, the importance of like citations and other things like that. I mean, was that a science at the time, or was that kind of a surprise?
Well, it was the importance of links really and content.
Sure.
I don't think that for me, I guess it was a surprise because I didn't know a lot about SEO at the time and I was just kind of figuring it out. But I think anyone who had been doing SEO before then would have been like, oh yeah, of course, that's a great SEO strategy.
Nice.
And what it did was it helped attract the attention of Google, the Google Maps people or places people at the time, because we were at the time the fastest growing like third-party review site, and they were wanting to make that product better. So we were the first, we had the first licensing deal to basically feed our reviews into Google Places because of that program.
Nice.
And that enabled us, I think, to get funding from venture capitalists who were like, whoa, this company's on fire.
Yeah.
And then we proved that we really didn't know what we were doing in SEO and our company really was on fire.
Nice. So moving on from there, I'm not sure the exact sequence, but tell us about then moving on at some point to found Local SEO Guide, and what was that kind of inception? Tell us a little bit about like the early days, the founding, and your goals at that point.
Sure. So the story is that so Insider Pages was getting, let's say, 5 million visits a month from Google at that time. And we raised a bunch of money and we kept growing the traffic, doing more SEO stuff and building out the team. Someone decided that we should redesign the website because it looked like a crappy Craigslist-y type website.
Sure.
And when we redesigned it, I kind of didn't know what I didn't know about technical SEO. And we killed the traffic overnight through what for me now is a simple technical SEO problem, but at the time was like, you know, the biggest mystery in the world. And that created a lot of problems for the business because we had spent so much time in SEO and not enough time really investing in figuring out a business model that we started to get a lot of pressure from our board to figure stuff out quickly. And we just couldn't figure it out quick enough. And so I actually lost my job. I was fired from Insider Pages and they decided to sell the company. And I was fortunate in that the day I lost my job, I also was scheduled to have drinks with a guy named Jason Oberfest, who was at that point the head of product at the LosAngelesTimes.com. And he was all excited because he just got approval to redesign the website. And so I said, hey, Jason, let me tell you what just happened to me today. And so I told him the story about how we redesigned the website, lost all our traffic, and I lost my job. And so he was like, can I hire you to be an SEO consultant? Because I don't know anything about it.
Right.
And I was like, I had nothing else to do that month. So I was like, okay. And so I started just doing SEO consulting for the LA Times. And next thing you know, the people just started hearing, oh, Andrew's an SEO consultant. And this was at a time when most people had never heard of it or hired people.
Yep.
And so it was just starting to become a thing. And so I guess I had a decent enough network that people started calling me. And so I got a lot of work in the local search based in particular, like Ingenio. Remember Ingenio?
Yeah, of course. AT&T bought them, didn't they?
Yeah. So they were an early client, you know, figured out all sorts of crazy things for them.
Yeah.
Pretty much anyone who had a local directory site, you know, hired me at some point. And 13 years later, here I am.
Well, so that's great. That all makes sense in terms of the timing, in terms of the marketing, in terms of the people saying, let's hire Andrew. But what about the actual, the SEO chops that, like, how did you become the SEO ninja? It was just like out of necessity from having these, you know, these available jobs and what you did, of course, prior to that. Like, did you just kind of build that out of necessity?
I think the one of the things you figure out when you've done SEO long enough is there's a moment when you can see the matrix.
Yeah.
And so I took, what is it, the blue pill?
Yeah.
You know, so I pretty quickly figured out a lot of things I didn't quite understand when I was at Insider Pages, which was more the technical stuff. And I suddenly figured out that 90% of the problems in SEO are encompassed by like all the stuff I already knew.
Yeah.
And there's 10% or maybe, and quibble with me on the percentages, maybe it's 50%. I don't know.
Yeah.
But a lot of the problems are all pretty standard. And so, and then the other ones are just like, the only way to figure them out is either through experience or testing.
Yeah.
And so basically I just started getting a lot more experience than most other people. Mm-hmm. And so I had a general good perspective on what a site needed to do. And you could go all day long on just helping clients with doing the basics right.
Right.
So, so most clients don't need like the neurosurgery.
Yeah.
You know, or the, like, but some do. Right. And so if you're good at figuring out what a business needs to do, and you're also good at, I don't know, being the consultant, then I think, you know, then at that point, like, I guess I was good at those things. And so it just kind of snowballed. And I can't say it was intentional at all. I just kind of woke up every morning and checked my inbox and there was another lead, right?
Interesting. It also, you know, talking about SEO is part this, part that. And this may be naive, but I have always thought that the types of stuff that I do in the companies I'm working for are naturally SEO friendly, given that they're content based. It's content rich stuff inherently. And that's probably half the battle or more than half the battle, I'm not sure. But then there's also a lot of the back end tweaking, of course, that is like, so it's a lot of things, it seems like. But I think, am I wrong in saying that like content gets you at least a certain distance towards good SEO?
That's right. That's right. But there are all these kind of curveballs that come at you.
Yep.
So as an example, in August, Google launched an update that people are calling the Medic update.
Yep.
And what we've seen is sites that have a complicated content setup lost a lot of traffic. Mm. And by complicated, I mean it's what we call topical overlap. So let's say you have a medical site, since the Medic update, and you have 50 different pages. Let's say you're targeting like bunion problems. You have 50 different pages about bunion surgery or how to diagnose bunions. If you're not careful, that could get you hit, because Google's like, all these pages are 50% the same kind of. And there's no tool you can use to really figure that out, other than looking at the data from 10 different tools and kind of triangulating, oh, this is the problem. And I think this is kind of what separates the SEOs from the, hey, I sell SEO, but I don't do it.
Right.
Is not even that we can solve these problems. It's that we have a good framework for kind of teasing out what the problem is.
Yeah.
And having a, a relatively high degree of confidence that that in fact is the problem.
Yeah.
It's like, I think it's like a lot of different disciplines where you just have to have seen like 50 different problems to start to get a handle on it.
Yeah. That goes back to your earlier point about experience. You can probably be better in diagnosis, which is probably half the battle.
And it's hard because anybody can sell SEO and say they know what they're doing, and it's impossible for the client to know until they implement stuff and realize it's not working. And it's a big problem for us because we'll get hit up by people who are, you know, hey, we've already hired 5 SEO consultants. Why should we hire you? And I'm like, well, you obviously are still looking for SEO help. So, you know, something's not working. But getting people over the hump that, oh, you can trust us that we're going to try, you know, we're going to do what we think we can for you that's a tricky part of the business right now.
Yeah. Well, we're going to pause there for a commercial break. When we come back, more from Andrew Schottland. Hi, everyone. It's Mike Bolin, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I'm here today to tell you about Artillery, which is a new publication and intelligence firm that's focused on VR and AR. Mobile AR, for example, has a large installed base of smartphones and real business models that are materializing around things like influencing local commerce. So we recommend that you go check out the site and its thought leadership of these key topics. And while you're there, you can sign up for the free Artillery Weekly newsletter. So head on over to artillery.co, that's Artillery without an E, and learn about some of the visually immersive technologies that could transform local commerce. So we're back. My guest is Andrew Schottland. So Andrew, before the break, we were talking about the kind of the path that got you to where you are today, a lot of the lessons you've learned in the art of SEO, and the kind of inception of Local SEO Guide. So let's pick it up there, because one thing that you guys are known for every year is a great kind of industry utility, for lack of a better term, which is the Local SEO Ranking Factors study. And over time, you are, in a very empirical way, determining among all of the things that are ranking factors in the world, things like content and link building and reviews and all these things, and how they're kind of trending in terms of like actual impact on traffic and SEO. So what's the latest in Local SEO Ranking Factors in terms of like the most recent wave, the results and the learnings, and then also kind of where are we for kind of when you're going to field the next wave?
So we have all the data gathered for the 2018 study. It should be, all things going perfectly, come out in December. This will be the largest study we've done so far, the most complicated one. And I think where we've kind of oriented the study is what we're seeing in our practice is that Google has, maybe they've always done this, but we're seeing it really show up obviously more and more, is Google has separate algorithms for separate types of queries. And what I mean by that is what it takes to rank, let's say, in a search for used cars in San Francisco is different than what it takes to show up for, I don't know, hospitals in San Francisco. Yeah. It's a different algorithm, or there are different factors that weigh heavier. So, and I'm trying to remember the exact data. So anyway, we've looked at the ranking factors by vertical for some of the top verticals in local. And we've got already the preliminary data shows, for example, in lawyers, I believe it is, lawyer locations tend, those that have more reviews, reviews tend to be a stronger correlating factor with top rankings and the local results for lawyers than, let's say, it does for hospitals, or hospitality. And links maybe is stronger for car dealers, that kind of thing. I don't have the exact data in front of me.
But it's vertical specific.
That's right. And it's not like you still have to do the same kind of things for all verticals to rank well, but what it is an indicator of, okay, if you're focusing in this vertical, maybe you spend a little more time on reviews or little more time on links. And I think that's kind of going to be the big news of our study this year. I still suspect we're going to be seeing is reviews and links are the top performing factors. And then what I'll call spam. Is also, so things like keywords in business name and keywords in link text to your site, that kind of thing.
So those are valuable findings. With respect to the different weight that Google is applying to different verticals for reviews, say, I've always wondered who is deciding that? Is that someone at Google saying, okay, we believe that in order to send someone to the right place, reviews are very important for hospitals or for lawyers, to use your example, but not so much for hospitals. Is that something that's algorithmically determined over time, or who's like playing with those knobs and switches to say that like those categories are now going to be rewarded for X, Y, and Z?
I have no idea, but my guess is what they do is they see that, let's just say, on day one, they launch their algorithm, and on day one, that's blanket for every vertical.
Yep.
And on day one, they're like, wow, you know, the auto results are good, but the lawyer results suck. Huh. And they, from whatever way they measure sucking versus good, right? Could be clicks on the pages.
Yep.
or pogo sticking, you know, people clicking back and forth. Mm-hmm. They have some way to judge what is a good result and a bad result.
Yeah, and then calibrate and so, that to the factors of what's present on those sites at scale.
Right, and so at some point, and my guess this is much more an algorithmic thing than someone actually turning a knob,
yep.
is at some point the algorithm starts tuning. It's got to be some kind of self-tuning thing
yep.
where it's like, okay, these types of results, you know, get more of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, they bucket tested across a billion queries, and they're yeah, like, okay.
That's what I was going to say. Their sample size makes it probably pretty reliable in terms of being able to correlate, you know, different factors.
Right. But the flip side of that is that every time they tweak a knob is they break something else. Because the algorithm is so complicated.
Of course. And that's the other question that's probably a philosophical question. But, you know, the algorithm has evolved so much since its inception. There are also major algorithm updates. There are small tweaks. There's different versions of how they change it. Like you mentioned, the medic update. We've seen ones in the past, like, you know, the animal named ones that have kind of rolled out over the years. Are those like addendums to like the core baseline foundation algorithm? And is it like how much of that is like sacred and you can't change versus, I mean, it's like the Constitution almost. I don't know. Well, how do you see that?
Boy, I could point you to like 20 bloggers who could give you their theory on that. We kind of don't care about that stuff.
Right.
We're kind of like, these are the things that tend to work. And so focus and they haven't changed much over time, just on the margins, like, yeah, you need a few more links or you need a few more reviews or whatever.
Yep.
So I wouldn't even worry about like, well, what's the algorithm versus what's a, you know, an adjustment or whatever you want to call it. It's all the algorithm.
Yep. Good point. Right. So we've been talking a lot about Google. Let's move on to Apple. So one topic that you've always sunk your teeth into as like an industry thought leader and as a writer and of course a practitioner of SEO, is Apple Maps. And not just Apple Maps, Apple in general as a search utility, given the prevalence of iOS devices, the fact that Spotlight Search has this like default on-deck position in front of, you know, hundreds of millions of iOS users. So for those unfamiliar, Apple is rebuilding Apple Maps from the ground up in terms of their mapping data. So from the beginning and ever since kind of like the Mapgate fail, one of the things they've done is rely too heavily on third parties for various things, whether it be listings and just kind of different data sets, different layers on the map, so to speak, like a municipal layer and a listings layer. And it's really this kind of patchwork. And they've wanted forever with that kind of like the black eye still left from Mapgate to really improve that. And they finally gotten around to it. They're taking a very Google-esque approach in terms of building that data in-house from the ground up. They're sending around like Street View cars to be less reliant on third-party data and really just have better data. So what's your take on this? And it's particularly as it relates to local listings, like was local listings a part of it that actually wasn't that bad? I mean, I know they're getting a lot of data from Yelp and other sources, but do you see that changing or does that impact local in any way, this new initiative?
Hard to say. So I can tell you anecdotally, we're seeing and hearing about more sightings of Apple Maps cars driving around, yep. you know, doing those like 360 street view type things.
Yeah.
Someone on my team just sent me a picture yesterday. Like, hey, we just saw one. Drove right by us. And And so if you, the thing that post I was responding to pointed out is how the vegetation displayed in Apple Maps has gotten really precise down to the, down to lane dividers, you know, where there's like grass in between like lanes on a highway.
Yeah.
You could see that now. And he showed before and after comparisons of, you know, that kind of green stuff you see in a map.
Was the exact fail of MapGate initially. I mean, they were going for flash instead of function. I mean, the flyover imagery was like something they spent so much time on developing, marketing, but then the actual utility of the map was useless because it couldn't find the place you were going to. So it's, you know, maybe it's a very Apple-centric approach to kind of, you know, focus on the packaging, the polish. But it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if it has the functionality to back that up.
So, I think the first order of business for Apple Maps is make sure you can get wherever you're going without being led into a dead end or brick wall or something.
Right.
On the business listing side, you know, every once in a while I check their acknowledgements page and they add a new listings data provider from somewhere. And there's probably a bunch of countries where they have no listings, but from what I could tell, they've gotten over the last couple of years a lot better at updating the listings, particularly as people file bug reports. Mm-hmm. But they don't seem to be investing heavily thus far that I can tell into doing anything beyond the basics. So, for example, Maps Connect, which is essentially the Google My Business platform for Apple Maps, hasn't really changed since they rolled it out.
Yeah.
That I can tell.
Well, I always like to say whenever analyzing any business, especially these large great products from tech giants, is follow the money. If you look at Google, it has a vested interest in getting maps right because it's tied closely to search, which is its cash cow. I think the reason why Apple is doing this now ties to its core model, which is hardware sales. You know, when you have a device that has better stuff on it, you're going to sell more iPhones. When in the kind of the goal to get people to buy an iPhone instead of a Pixel 3, you know, they're seeing the fact that some of their default kind of apps are faltering. I think that's a motivational factor to do it. But the question is how it does affect like all of this listing stuff. And I guess that's still a question mark.
Like, it seems like they could be doing so much more with their, like, even just copying what Google My Business is doing, but not going to happen anytime soon, I think.
Right. Okay. We're going to pause there for another commercial break. When we come back, more from Andrew Schottland. Hi everyone, it's Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I'm here today to tell you about Artillery, which is a new publication and intelligence firm that's focused on VR and AR. Mobile AR, for example, has a large installed base of smartphones and real business models that are materializing around things like influencing local commerce. So we recommend that you go check out the site and its thought leadership of these key topics. And while you're there, you can sign up for the free Artillery Weekly newsletter. So head on over to artillery.co, that's Artillery without an E, and learn about some of the visually immersive technologies that could transform local commerce. So we're back. My guest is Andrew Schottland. So Andrew, before the break, we were talking about a lot of SEO matters, a lot of matters of Apple and Google and where they're going generally with respect to local search and mapping. Now we want to find out a little bit more about you. So this is our lightning round we do in every episode with kind of fairly quick hit answers. So starting off, what's something about you that few people know about?
I think I told you that at the beginning with my Red Shoe Diaries.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. All right, okay. We'll take that.
Actually, here's a good one. I invented the wave. Go check out my Twitter profile. And you'll see that I invented the wave.
The wave? Are you sure? Haven't they been check doing that for like before you were alive?
Check it out.
Okay, I will. And listeners, check that out too. We can crowdsource this.
Yeah,
the fact checking. But very interesting. I'm looking forward to reading about that. So what's the profession you'd want to have if you weren't the SEO guy, the local SEO guy?
So the reason why I started working at Showtime was I actually wanted to work in entertainment. And I think I wanted to be a writer, but I thought that it was a shitty way to make a shitty business, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like a comedy writer on like a writing team for like some sitcom or something like that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What's the company or tech startup that you think it'd be most fun to be like a part of at the moment of inception? You know, like the HP garage, or like the meeting of Woz and Jobs, or like, you know, just a, you know, if you could go back in time and be a part of any of those kind of founding stories.
Oh, I think Netscape for sure.
Yeah.
Like I'm
Andreessen.
Like, I who knows, but I imagine that when they figured out what they were doing, like suddenly the future became like not crystal clear, but so much clearer to them than anybody else.
Yeah.
And having that kind of ability to see into the future because you're, you know, you've stumbled onto something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. That seemed, there's so many great companies, but that kind of, that must have been, they must have just been like laughing all day long.
Yeah.
Or their brains must have been exploding. They're like, oh wow, like this is going to happen and this is going to happen and this is going to happen. Right?
Absolutely. Well, you talked earlier about AOL and Prodigy. They really blew the doors open for just like a more decentralized, open, just the browser itself was, it just, it,
yeah,
made it all possible. Okay. What about, what superpower would you most want to have?
So this is interesting. I'll have to find the podcast, where they talk about this guy, his one cocktail party question is, would you rather be able to have the ability to fly or the ability to be invisible?
Uh-huh.
And what you pick says a lot about you.
Right.
And so, flight, I think is what I would take.
Yeah.
For sure. But then of course you could also do the, like, you know, if you had three wishes, what would you wish for? As many wishes as,
yeah,
I want.
Then you get as many wishes. Yeah. Yeah. That's every like third grader's first answer to that question.
Superpower is whatever superpower I want that day.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting if you pick invisibility.
Yeah, what is it supposed to mean about you? Do you know the answers to like the psychoanalytic?
It's really interesting, but the people who pick invisibility suddenly start questioning their choice because it basically is like you're a sneak. Like you're it's kind of whereas people who fly, like, hey, I can fly and I can do great things, and
yeah. So lastly, what are your kind of personal goals for, I have been asking the remainder of 2018, but we're kind of there. So I guess I should rephrase that and say, what's your goals like going into 2019?
Oh, I think my goal is to grow Local SEO Guide, a bit more. We have a pretty good business right now. But we're not like a growth business. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not trying to be a growth business. We're just trying to be a profitable service that people like and come back to and refer friends to. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, part of that is the goal for 2000. It's like, okay, can we add more services or add more clients, and improve the services we have? No more complicated than that.
Yeah, that's great. So that's a good place to end it. It's all the time we have. So I want to thank you, Andrew, for spending time with us.
You are welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yep. And thank you all for listening, and stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com. Also subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and stay tuned for lots more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.